Hello, everybody. My name is Derek Plotkowski. I'm a PhD student at the University of Guelph up in Canada, where I work at the Simcoe Research Station, which is located on close to the north shore of Lake Erie. So if you're in Erie, Pennsylvania, go due north. That's about where you'll find us. The research that I've been working on has been focused on cider apples, and one of my projects is about using a foliar urea spray to see how we can increase the amount of amino acid nitrogen in apple juice for Crimson Crisp apples. So over the course of today's talk, I'm going to give you a bit of background about cider production and why this concept of yeast assimilable nitrogen development is important in cider production. Then I'll go into what we did in our experiment and how I carried it out and what we found out. And there will be some time for questions at the end. A crash course in cider making, there are four main parts to it. Growing the fruit itself, processing it into a juice so that it'll be usable for fermentation, and then the fermentation and storage of the final product of cider. It's very similar to wine making, as Travis mentioned in the earlier presentation today. The principal process in all of this is alcoholic fermentation, which is carried out primarily by yeast, which are going to convert sugar into ethanol. But it's not simply a matter of fermenting sugar into ethanol. Yeast need other nutrients in order to reproduce, survive, and thrive. That's really where this concept of yeast assimilable nitrogen comes in. YAN, which is how I'll refer to it for most of this presentation, is the nitrogen that's in a medium such as juice that's biologically available to yeast so that they can actually access to construct proteins or do whatever else they need to do with it. YAN consists of the primary amino nitrogen plus ammonium in the juice. And we have structures on here of ammonium and a basic amino acid, as well as a variety of yeast strains. So we're interested in YAN for cider because we often find that YAN in apple juice is insufficient for fermentation. We see in many standardized protocols, even in lab work, that there is an assumed addition of diammonium phosphate or GoFerm or some other nutrient supplement, which often includes amino nitrogen. And that's par for the course for cider producers as well. But we know that YAN composition, whether it's made up of amino acids or ammonium, is going to affect the fermentation in the final product. I have a figure down here from an older paper that shows the production of hydrogen sulfide, which is something we don't want in our cider, caused by the lack of methionine in apple juice. So we want YAN to be increased in apple juice so that we don't run into problems like that and so that we have a smoother, more complete fermentation. We also know that nitrogenous compounds are going to change over the course of the growing season throughout the fruit growth and development, and that this is different for all sorts of varieties. There was a Spanish paper conducted almost 30 years ago in which I have this graph on the right side here that's showing just the very different concentrations of amino acids even in different varieties in the same growing season from the same orchard. We also know that in addition to cultivar, nitrogen fertilization will affect the compounds that result in the juice, that you find in the juice at harvest time. So there was a recent paper in Viticulture. A lot of our cider research is repurposed wine research, and that they used foliar sprays, I think this was conducted in British Columbia, to increase YAN in grape juice for wine production. And they used urea as an inexpensive foliar fertilizer and hand sprayed it onto the grapevines. And we thought we would do the same thing in apples because YAN is such a limiting factor for many cider producers. So we wanted to understand how foliar fertilization will affect juice yam composition, so that we can figure out how we can manage nitrogen in the orchard instead of doing it in the cidery. And this will lay the groundwork, perhaps, for future experiments involving other types of fertilization or other cultivars. We decided to use Crimson Crisp apple juice because this particular variety shows promise for use in Ontario. It has some cider potential in addition to fresh market potential, and it yields pretty regularly and is resistant to scab. Our experimental design had 18 experimental units, so three treatments repeated six times in our orchard. It was a high-density planting of Crimson Crisp trees in a completely randomized design. So each experimental unit was a block of 10 trees, and the apples from those trees ended up being combined for a single juice. We began to do foliar sprays a week post-petal fall, so in mid-June, and for each of the treatments, we did a different number of sprays. Six of the units received zero sprays. Three of them received, one of the treatments was trees that received three sprays of urea solution, so three consecutive weeks, and then another treatment received six sprays. And we began to sample the fruit every 3 weeks after the third spray was completed. And so every 3 weeks from roughly the beginning of July until the end of September when it was harvested. And there was one more sampling unit that we stored in a cooler for 6 weeks before processing and measuring. So our main hypothesis, I had three that I'm discussing at this presentation today. The first, that fertilizer amount will, as it increases, will increase the PAN concentration. The second was that amino acid nitrogen concentration in juice will decrease as the fruit matures, as shown in other studies. And third, that a post-harvest storage period would result in a net decrease in amino acid nitrogen. So I already mentioned that we sprayed and sampled, but then we, in addition to that, we processed the fruit, stored it, and then did all of our analyses using high-performance liquid chromatography, and I'll get into that shortly. The sprays consisted of 50 liters of water, 50 milliliters of a surfactant called Regulade, and 600 grams of urea. Each tree was applied with a hand sprayer that I sprayed to drip. I loaded the sprayer onto the back of our gator and got out of it to hand spray each of the trees to cover the entire canopy. So when we collected the samples, I picked one fruit randomly from each of the trees in a block, so for 10 total fruit, and those were pressed together so the juice would represent each one of the experimental units. We took that fruit into the lab, pressed it using just a kitchen-grade juicer with a grinding setting, put that onto cheesecloth with a custom-made steel rack and cloth press, and collected the juice in a cylinder and froze that at minus 80 degrees Celsius until we were going to process it for HPLC. In preparation for HPLC, we had to titrate each of the juice samples, and then each of those titrated samples were processed using a dilution with sodium phosphate buffer and syringe filtered. The protocol that we used was from Agilent, using their AAA Zorbax Eclipse column and FMOC, which is a blue fluorescent compound that will bind to nitrogen groups that are freed up by derivatizing the amino acids with O-phthalaldehyde. And this allowed us to measure the individual concentrations of the amino acids using chromatogram standards, and we were able to calculate the primary amino nitrogen from that. We analyzed everything using SAS9.4. The research the tables that I'm going to present to you today, we used a one-way ANOVA for this data because I wanted to show the differences caused by the dates of harvest and by the treatments at maturity. There was an interaction between the treatments at maturity, the date and the treatment, but this data here is a bit more important for today's discussion. In this first table, I have pan concentrations in mature crimson crisp juice, and we see that from beginning of the summer, July, we have very high total primary amino nitrogen concentrations in all of the treatments, and that is reduced by the time harvest comes around. But we see that from the middle of August, there are no longer a significant difference between the juice, the pan concentration in the juice harvested at in the middle of August versus maturity at September 25th, or the stored concentration. So in theory, we could predict the pan concentration, the total primary amino nitrogen concentration in the juice as much as a month before harvest time. If we look at the second table, we see in mature fruit that the zero spray treatment and the three spray treatment were not different from one another, but in the excessive six spray fertilizer treatment, we were able to boost the primary amino nitrogen concentration in the juice. This is a graphical representation of that, in which we see the six spray treatment and the top line with the triangles, and we see that it's higher than the other two lines from the beginning of the season until the end. Bear with me on this graph. I wasn't able to get the grouping quite right in my graphing program. Each of these three columns, it's grouped into groups of three, the zero spray treatment, the three spray treatment, and the six spray treatment. This graph is showing for each harvest sampling date the relative concentrations of asparagine, aspartic acid, and other amino acids. So we see in the early part of the season that asparagine is the dominant amino acid present in apple juice, while over the course of the growing season, aspartic acid slowly grows to take a larger proportion of the total amino acids present in the juice, while asparagine decreases. But we also see that in the six spray treatment of a foliar spray that asparagine manages to maintain a higher fractional percentage, which is interesting. It suggests that the additional amino nitrogen in the juice is present in the form of asparagine. And this is just a relative percentage-wise visual of the amino acid concentrations relative to one another across the growing season. So I already went over these results in our graphs, but in summary, the six-spray treatment has a significantly higher primary amino nitrogen concentration than our control, which is an excessive treatment of nitrogen, whereas the three-spray treatment, which is closer to recommended levels for foliar fertilization, wasn't significantly different than the control. And our amino acids do indeed change over time, as hypothesized. So if we look at my original hypotheses, we can conclude on the first hypothesis that our results were consistent with the six-spray treatment, that fertilizer increasing would increase the juice pan, but that wasn't true for our three-spray treatment. Our results were consistent with the second hypothesis that amino acid nitrogen would decrease as the fruit matured, but the post-harvest storage period didn't actually result in a change in amino acid concentration when we looked at that statistically. So that wasn't consistent with our hypothesis that the post-harvest storage period would reduce amino acid nitrogen. So ultimately, we were able to see we can manipulate eustachianol nitrogen in the orchard using fertilization. It might not be practical, at least with our current methods, but it's something that we could study further, either by looking at other types of fertilization, the timing of application, or other cultivars. I'd like to acknowledge my committee and especially Dr. John Klein, my advisor at Guelph, as well as our funding sources, the Ontario Craft Cider Association and Growing Forward too. So thank you for your time today. If you have any questions, please go for it. Yes.
Did you look at ammonia at all?
No, we did not. We are. I still have samples that we're going to measure total yan on, and the difference between those will be the ammonium. Yes. Yes, they're free amino acids. Yeast aren't going to process proteins, for instance. Sometimes small peptides are okay, but there are certain amino acids, aspartic acid, glutamate, that get used up more rapidly by yeast. And there are some, particularly proline, that aren't assimilable by yeast. So we know that different cultivars are going to have different relative amino acid concentrations. So in theory, there we could you could breed a cultivar that has a more idealized amino acid profile for cider production. At the same time, yeast isn't going to bother the fruit during the season. It lives on the cuticle on the outside, so you're not going to have a problem with the juice or consumption during the season. All right, thank you for your time.